Hi, this is Danielle from the Jaws Curator, and this is episode 124 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can visit their gorgeous lineup of artists at saatchiart.com. And while I have your ear for a moment, I wanted to put out a little request. My new book, which features stories of 75 female artists and projects inspired by those stories to help you become the next great artist of your generation, is coming out on October 2nd in bookshops all over the world, and I cannot wait to promote it. I am super proud of all of my other books, but this one, oh my goodness, I am bursting to share it with the world. So, if you are connected to a gallery, a university, college, a bookshop that you might think might be a good stop on my book tour this coming fall, send me an email at contact@thejealouscurator.com and let me know. Okay, the end, and thank you very much. So, today I'm talking to a collage artist that I have loved for years. I think I wrote about her and her beautifully surreal work in the fall of 2014. So many of you have asked me to have her on, and today I am delivering. California-based Eugenia Lawley is on the podcast. Now, I have done a tiny bit of research, and did you know that she didn't start making art until 2011? Apparently, before that, she was in the tech world and experienced some kind of major illness. You see, it's backstories like this that make me so happy that I have a podcast. Okay, let's call Eugenia in California and get answers to all of these questions. Hi, Eugenia.
Hi.
I am so happy to talk to you because I have been a gigantic fan of you for a very long time.
Oh, thank you very much. Much appreciated. Thank you for inviting me here today.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. I've had so many people email me and say, can you please have her on? And so I'm so happy that we were able to do this. And I have 5 zillion questions for you, so we're just going to jump right in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you live in California now, but are you from Greece?
Yes, I'm originally from Greece.
Oh, okay, and so were you born there, grew up there?
I was born in Athens, Greece, and grew up there until the age of about, I don't know, 24, I think, and then I moved I lived actually in Europe, in Germany, UK, worked in UK for a few years, and then I came to the US in 2001.
Okay, okay. And so when you were little, because you found your art career a little bit later, and so when you were little, were you artsy?
Yeah, I was actually self-taught drawing. I was actually pretty good at it all by myself. But,
yeah.
Life happened in the middle. So I actually followed a career as a computer programmer.
Yes, I read that somewhere and I was blown away. That's why I'm so happy we're doing this. and so when you went to school, did you go to school in Greece then?
Yes, school in Greece and also college in Greece.
And so what did you study? Did you study computer science or?
Yes, computer programming and database analysis was the exact title.
Oh my God. And so is that the work that you were doing in Germany and the UK?
Yeah, mostly in the UK, actually, yes. I actually moved to the UK in 1996,
mm-hmm.
Right as the internet was booming, so there was a lot of work about those kind of things. So I was lucky. I was at the right time there.
That's exactly like me. I went for new media design, for web design,
mm-hmm.
and graduated in 97.
Oh, wow.
So we could have overlapped if we were in the right country. I mean, were you on the design side at all, or were you completely on the back end?
Mostly back end, databases and programming.
And did you like it?
Originally, yes. You see, my first love in life was Mr. Spock from Star Trek. So I was actually fell in love with him when I was 4 years old. So I always wanted to be a computer programmer because he was a computer programmer.
Oh,
so I was actually happy that I was a programmer at some point.
That's so cute. It was his ears, wasn't it? It was his ears got you.
But it had a huge effect on me. And I always wanted to do something with either computers or space or something like that.
Oh, well, that makes sense with
you know, the dream came true when I moved to the UK and found, a job as I was working as a computer programmer and then designing databases, basically.
Okay. Oh my gosh. And so, okay, I'm just gonna. How the heck is your life the way it is now? That is quite a jump.
Yeah. So in 2000, I actually met my husband through my work. I was actually on the side. I was working as a journalist as well, reporting on tech news sites, on some big sites at the time. And he was a programmer here in Silicon Valley, working for a big company at the time over here.
Uh-huh.
And we met online, and then I got married, moved to the U.S., and then I became actually a full-time blogger, a tech blogger. I stopped working as a programmer.
Oh.
And but then a few years later, around 2005, my health really went very south, and I stopped working altogether.
Yeah, I read about that. So what happened? If you don't mind me prying.
No problem at all. I don't have those problems like talking about my health. Actually, I like to share this information because it might help others.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I was just fine when I was living in Europe, but the moment I moved to the U.S., everything just went bad. I was just sick. I mean, my hair were falling out. My teeth became transparent. I had inflammation all over. I mean, everything just... It was obviously some autoimmune problem that nobody could diagnose. I went to the best doctors here, Stanford and all of that, and nobody could find anything.
Wow.
And I was getting really, really bad with my health towards the end, around 2010, 2011. I was really, really towards my end, literally the end.
Wow.
And it was about actually 10 years almost to the month when I found the solution or what was the problem. And I just decided, because I had put on a lot of weight, I decided to just change my diet, and everything, all the problems went away, basically.
What?
So a few, 1 or 2 years later, I found that I actually had celiac disease.
Oh, my gosh. Those are some crazy symptoms. So what did you cut out then? Gluten?
I had to cut out all the grains.
Oh.
There are two kinds of celiac diseases, two types. One of them is that where you simply cut down all the gluten, and you usually, if you're very strict to it, you become better. And there's the other type where you have to cut out all the grains, all the sugar, all the processed food, all the, you know, industrial seed oils. Basically, you have to go much stricter in order to find your health. And I had the second type.
Wow. And so did you
really go strict?
Did you sort of figure that out on your own?
Yes. I did the celiac disease test, you know, for celiac disease, the blood test,
yeah.
In 2003, but it came out negative. But the doctor back then had not told me that the blood test is only about 35% accurate. You have to do the endoscopy to see if you really have celiac disease. And the doctor said, I don't have it. And, you know, I just, I thought I went along with that. Okay, if the doctor says that I don't have it, then I don't have it.
Right, of
no,
course.
No, I did.
Oh, my God. And so how quickly after you changed all of that did you start to feel better?
Within, I would say, 2 or 3 days. That fast. That fast within. I mean, I remember I started this diet while I was on vacation in France. Because my husband is French. And on the way back, so 2 or 3 days, I started becoming strict. I started reading on the internet about that and becoming much more strict about was it in there. And on the way back to the plane, inside the plane, on the big, long flight from Paris to San Francisco, and everybody was literally exhausted and sleeping on the chairs, you know, on the plane, and I had so much energy, the most energy I had in 10 years. My husband could not believe it. He said he knew at that moment that that was the solution, and it did.
Wow.
And within, of course, 3 or 4 months, I was much, much better. In fact, my change towards art, let's say, happened within two months of me changing my diet. It could not have happened before. I did not have the mental bandwidth to think that way.
Yeah. So what happened? Because I read that you know, like that this you sort you know you got better, and then all of a sudden that's when your art career started. And so what was the catalyst?
So what happened was there were two things. One was that within 2 months, so I started the diet in September of 2011, and in November I started having those closed eye visuals. All I could explain to them is like when I would close my eyes, for example, if I'm in the shower and I'm closing my eyes, you know, because the water coming on me or whatever, I would see abstract art. I never had this before. It was so weird. And I have to make it clear here that I never gotten any psychedelics or any weed or anything like that. I never did.
You were self-medicating in the shower.
I don't even take aspirin. Yeah. You know? I'm trying to be as healthy as possible.
Okay, we believe you. We believe you.
And yet, I was having those visuals. In the beginning, I could not understand what was going on. I actually asked about it another collage artist named Ben Giles, who is also
in the collage arena.
And he had those as well.
I have them too.
He's the only other person I know that he has that thing.
I have it too. That's why when you said it, I was like, oh yeah, like I totally know what you mean.
Yeah. So I think what happened was that when I became healthier, the right side of the brain started working. I think that at least that's my theory of what was happening. Because before that, I did not have the energy to probably power both. Oh, my brain. So I had to just simply operate on my left brain, which is the brain which will get you simply through life. Mm-hmm. You know, get up in the morning, go do your work, go cook something or whatever. So this is the automated part of our experience, the robotic part. And the right side of the brain is the more the part of the subconscious, let's say. And probably I did not have enough energy to simply power it completely. So when the energy came back, it started waking up or something like that.
Wow. And so what made you, I love that theory. And so you're closing your eyes, you're seeing these things. And so did you think, well, I better put it down on paper or something?
So what happened was, I was actually, fighting the feeling. I just wanted to go back to computers basically. However, what happened was, I started working with a musician, John Mouse. He's pretty well known in the underground indie scene, rock scene. And I wanted to make a music video for him. Mm. And so I made a video using it had animation, hand drawn animation on top of background, so of a picture background. Mm-hmm. And so I made a music video for him. I think I finished it in March of 2012. And when that finished, I was kind of already known in the form that he's got among his fans. And so I thought, why don't I do a visual art as a poster for him, for the fans to print that on their own at home and have it on their walls. And I put that together, two or three collages for him. And I was actually a bit astonished by myself. I thought, those don't look even half bad. I was look bad. It's the first time I was doing something like that. And then I thought, okay, maybe I should actually do more of those.
Oh my God. And when you were working on them, did you love it? Like, were you... when you were working on them, were you loving it?
Yes, I liked the experience, yes, and I liked the result as well. And then I started looking around what the collage was about at the time. And I was actually, again, at the right time. I arrived on collage at the right time because the modern vintage collage that we have today, the pop surrealism type that we have today that is very popular, really literally started towards the end of 2011.
Yeah.
There were about 10... collage artists, they were doing that type of art, and they were very popular on Tumblr specifically. So when I started doing some research and seeing what these guys were doing, and I really, really, really loved the style, and I was seeing that it was getting traction, more and more artists that were actually doing that type of collage. Because before that, collage was very Dada, as it's called, collage.
Yeah.
And that was never popular. Not popular with the people, not popular with the galleries. In fact, I would say that since the invention of collage by Picasso and Ernst in like in the early 1920s, collage has been, you know, an underground type of art.
Yeah.
And in 2011, 2012, it's when collage literally became mainstream. Still, again, among very young people, of course. So mm-hmm. you could still consider it underground art, but it had a pop element into it. It was easier to understand. It was not all crazy abstract things. And as much as I love abstract art and I love abstract collage, or should I say better, I learned to love it. Because in the beginning, I did not like it. And I learned to love it and learned to understand it, but most people simply don't have the time to invest in it. And so pop collage just exploded, and I just wanted to do more of that. And it was really, I mean, I got, I don't know if I got lucky, I was there at the right time, or I don't know, because within 3 months, I was already published, basically. I started doing all of that for fun. I was given, in fact, all my art for free through Creative Commons.
Wow.
Resolutions for people to print at home, you know, do whatever they want with those. And yet, I started getting interest by magazines and things within 3 months, which actually, you know, it felt pretty nice. And so
yeah.
I kept doing it.
Oh, my. And that's. That is so, like, did you realize the insanity of that?
Yeah.
Because if you weren't in the art world.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know if there is any higher power. I don't exactly, I call myself a spiritualist atheist.
Yeah.
But I believe that if there is some higher level, that I felt that this was, let's say, a payback for 10 years of pain.
Yes.
You know, so a gift of a sort. So
yeah.
I don't think that it all came from me. A lot of the artworks that I have done, for example, 3 Minutes to Nirvana, I don't know if you've seen this artwork of mine.
Probably.
I don't even feel that it came from me. I was literally in a trance when I did that.
Hmm.
So sometimes I feel it was simply a gift. That's where I actually part from most artists. Most artists are born artists, do art their whole lives, and they go through the difficult part of this, not having money, not having their work recognized, and then here I come out of nowhere, and within 3 months, I'm published. And it's unfair, you know? For most artists, this is unfair. But, you know, I have other things that don't work for me, I guess.
Yeah. You struggled. You just struggled in a different way.
And get something back somehow.
Yeah.
So at the end, everything is neutral at the end. You know, if you try to equalize everything, I think everything is neutral. So.
No, that's, I mean, I don't want to take away from that. That is amazing. But I was just curious because, you know, if you haven't kind of grown up in the art world and in art school and surrounded by other artists and hearing about all the struggles and hearing it takes forever. And I mean, it doesn't take forever for everybody and, you know, whatever. But if you understood that, like, wow, this is kind of crazy. And so were the first things galleries that were approaching you, or was it doing, like, commercial illustration for magazines and things?
Mostly for magazines. My work is not very gallery-friendly, actually. It's more illustration for magazines. However, in the beginning, I did work with galleries.
Mm-hmm.
I did try to get in touch with galleries, and I got quite a few of them interested. However, I stopped working with galleries because my experience is that most of them just don't pay back.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense to me. I prefer now to make business on my own rather than use galleries. I don't. In the age of the internet, I do not think we need mediators. We can do everything on our own.
Yeah.
The problem is, of course, from what I've seen from other artists, other collage artists, is that they don't want to deal with the business side of it. They just want to do the art. So that's cool. That's cool with me. But they should not expect the maximum of what they can actually do with their art.
Yeah, exactly. For the longest time, I really struggled with that because I thought, you know, I can just sell my stuff online myself. Like, especially with Jealous Curator, I have this big platform, and it's just
exactly.
Like, I can just do it myself and get 100% of the money because, I made 100% of the work. But then I was so, I can write about other people all day long, but I was so shy to put my stuff up and say that it was for sale. So I realized that I was making 100% of nothing. And so I actually have a gallery now in Toronto for, you know, bigger work and things that I'm still too shy to sell. They can do that for me, and then they get 50%, and I would have had zero of that. And then I've gotten confidence to sell my little works. But yeah, it's a personality thing, right? And
yeah,
that's so fantastic.
I think so, yeah.
That you,
I've seen the shyness in other artists as well. They're really shy to show their work because it's so personal. I mean, art is personal, right?
Yeah.
So it makes sense that there are a lot of people who would be shy. But then again, I'm not a shy person. I just talk about everything. Even the most difficult question you might think, I will just simply answer it right now on this podcast. I don't have a problem with it.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, that's what I was wondering. I was like, I wonder if she's going to want to talk about this illness. And you're like, yeah. So here's what happened. I love it. I have to ask you, so Spock, is that why there's so much space in so many of your pieces?
Well, space is very important to me because, I don't know, space was always what I always dreamed about, always. I mean, even today, my biggest hobby apart from art is actually checking SpaceX and the rocket launches and all that stuff.
Wow, that's awesome.
I love space. I love the possibility of space because it's so vast that I can't even fathom what kind of other life forms are out there, which surely they are, obviously.
Yeah.
But how they evolve, how different they are, you know? It's also fascinating to me. And what's even more fascinating to me, it's how you can approach them without even having to hop on a rocket or on a spaceship and go there. Maybe there are other ways to visit, like through consciousness, right? That's another thing we could maybe talk about later, but that's one part. And the other part is that space, I believe, here's what happens with the modern vintage collage. If you see other collage artists, you will see that they also use a lot of space. And the reason for that is because not only it just goes well with collage, but I believe that young people today, who are mostly the people who look at the collage today, are fascinated by the possibilities there. It's like we live in an awakened world. The millennials are awakened. And because of that, they see glimpses of that through surreal collage. Mm-hmm. And space is a big part of it.
Huh. I love it. I'm so happy that we're doing this because I always, you know, I wonder because I do collage, but it's different than yours. And I can always tell when it's your work and space is a huge part of it. So that's so cool. And then let's talk about the landscapes that get involved in there. Because it always seems like it's, you know, there's mountains and there's,
there's the practical thing about collage. For example, there are a lot of collage artists who use modern images. I use vintage images for copyright reasons.
Right.
And for look and feel reasons.
Yep.
So when you use vintage pictures, you don't have much, you don't have a lot of kind of pictures to work with. If you want something, do something very technological, very artificial to make it look surreal, whatever, you won't find vintage pictures that are very industrial looking or very robotic or whatever. You have to use modern pictures for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not use modern pictures for copyright reasons, first. And second, because they're shot digitally, they look like pictures. They don't look like a painting. If you see all the vintage collages from me or other artists, you will see that they look like paintings. And the reason for that is because, for two reasons. The grain, the kind of positive film they had at the time, the Kodachrome back in the 50s, and the fact that it's already scanned from magazines that they have lost their color.
Right.
And they have been already deteriorated through 50 or 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
This makes them look like paintings. So there's also that visual look that you cannot do with Photoshop. No matter how much you try, how many filters you put on top, it's not going to look like a real like real film, like real painting.
Yeah.
If you use modern images. Because there's a type of a type of look that simply there is no plugin for it.
yeah, too bad. But are the space images vintage too?
Most of them, yes. Not all of them, though, because NASA is copyright free, and so I can use modern images for space. But I always prefer the old ones. The old ones are they're not sharp.
Yeah.
And because they're not sharp, they look like they've been painted.
Yeah. And you're right. There's something about the color quality too, like the inks that were used.
Yes, the color from back in the 50s and 60s had a very the palette of the film was narrow.
Yeah.
So you could not have, like, let's say when you have like the blue that green blue that you also see in the Hollywood movies, the hazel I think it's called color, and that color is on almost all blues that you can see. It's like there's only one blue. You don't see shades of it. The new type of film that came in the late 70s changed that. In the late 70s and after film, it looks more like digital. It's much more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
However, that accuracy is not what we want, at least not what I want.
Yeah, yeah. You're a big researcher, aren't you?
Yes, I research everything I do before I do something.
I love it. Do you have databases with all this information? No, it's so interesting because, you know, I have always loved collage too, but I went to school for painting, and collage wasn't even talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did it, it was almost considered crafty or...
Yes.
You know, it just didn't count.
I will explain why collage is not big in the art industry.
Yeah.
The main reason is not because it's made of paper or anything like that. It's because it's small. The art industry, it's not the same as commercial art. There are two kinds of industry today when we're talking about art. We're talking about the art that is sold only via big galleries and art fairs and auctions,
mm-hmm.
and the type of art that indie art that like me and a lot of other people are doing on the side. On the big art industry, you cannot sell collage. Because it's so small.
Yeah.
When somebody wants to pay $1, $2, or $3 million, they don't want something that is magazine size. They want something that, because
damn.
Most of these people who buy those things are newly rich people that they want to show off. And so they buy those expensive pieces in order to show to their friends, look what I bought. Look, so you cannot show something that's so small, poster card size or whatever, and say, look what I bought for $1 million.
Yeah.
So, it's not working. And so the art industry never got hot with collage. That's the reason, I believe. I don't think that there is anything fundamentally wrong with collage as in terms of art. You can still express yourself, even if it does not allow you a lot of leeway on how to express yourself. Because in collage, you're always limited by the kind of pictures that you can find.
Yeah.
You might have something in your mind that you want to create, and if that picture does not exist, or it's not shot in exactly the way you need to, you cannot make it work. For example, I might have an idea, I might be able to do most of the idea, then I need to place a person in it, and I need a specific angle shot of that person. And if I have the right person with the right colors, wearing the right colors, clothes or whatever, but it's not shot from the right angle, the collage is not going to work.
Yeah.
So it's not like painting or an illustration where you simply paint or draw exactly what you need. You have to find the right pictures. And more often than not, the right pictures are not available.
Yeah.
So it's a much more restricting type of art, but at the same time, it's more interesting, I think, because it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
That's the challenge of collage.
I know. And isn't it just a jackpot when you find what you're looking for?
It is, it is. And in fact, it is the reason why a lot of the magazine commissions that I do fall through, in fact, because they need something specific. They have the journalists have something specific in their minds. They ask me for something, and then there are simply no pictures to make it so. So I often tell them, go with an illustrator, and they go with an illustrator.
Yeah. And so are you doing this? This is your full-time thing now.
Yes. Full-time, well, let's say I don't work more than 2 or 3 hours a day. I don't want to work more.
Yeah, but this is your job. Like, you're not still doing programming or anything.
No, I will never go back to computers.
And what does your husband think of all of it, like this transformation and art, now he's married to an artist?
He absolutely loves it. My husband is also a software engineer.
Mm-hmm.
He worked for Google's Android, and now he's the Yahoo.
Oh, wow.
And he's an architect there. So we got together because we were both into computers. But eventually, when I got into art, he absolutely loved the idea.
Yeah.
I'm very happy that he loved the idea.
Yeah, that's so cool. My husband went to school for computer science, too.
All right, cool.
Yeah, he was a program. We actually met at IBM.
Oh,
there
wow.
you go. Okay, so I know you've got neighbor's kids to pick up, so I don't want to keep you for too long. Okay, you know what, let's just do the not so speedy speed round, because
I think we have a little bit more.
Do we have time?
Okay. I would like to talk a little bit about art school.
Yeah, okay,
because I've never been to one.
Okay.
And since I'm obviously I'm doing okay in my art without having been to one, I just feel, I mean, there are a lot of people who email me and ask if they should go to art school, and I usually tell them, no, you should not go. Actually, this is a very simplistic way of answering it, but a better way would be that if you need to learn specific techniques, techniques on how to do something that you cannot learn otherwise, then you need to go to art school. But if you already know the techniques, then you should not go to art school. It's a waste of time and money.
Mm-hmm.
If you know how to do something, there's nothing else that the art school will help you. Of course, if you are among the best, then they can help you with the big auctions and the big galleries and things like that. But only 1% of those people who graduate actually make it on those things.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know the techniques, and you know how to research everything online and learn how to do something, in my opinion, there's no reason for somebody to go to art school. They just go directly, do their art, and learn how to do business on their own, and they'll be just fine.
Yeah, I agree. But, and, I get a lot of people asking me the same thing, because I did go to art school. And the thing is, there's this weird, well, you clearly don't have it, but there's this weird shame around being self-taught. And I think that is crazy, because if you have enough gumption to teach yourself something, like, that's awesome, that's amazing, right? So why would there be any shame around that? And you don't need the piece of paper that says you're an artist. You can just go and be an artist. And
believe that having a paper to be an artist is
it doesn't make sense.
It's an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
In my opinion, it's an oxymoron.
Yeah.
You're either an artist, which means that you can express yourself. Why would you need the paper to tell you that you can express yourself?
Exactly.
Now you can express yourself.
Yeah.
You have the paper that says
so. That's right. You've got a gold stamp. Get out there. I know. And, for me,
it's all in the minds of people. They need to get over shame and shyness and all of that. All of that is simply just do what they want to do and put it out in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And, I went to, I've told this story 5,000 times on this podcast, but I went to a very conceptual school, and I should not have gone to a conceptual school. I wanted to go somewhere exactly like you said. I wanted to go and learn how to do stuff. Like, I would have loved to have learned about ceramics or spent more time in the dark room or, my favorite thing was printmaking, because there was actual process and steps, and I that's just the kind of person that I am. And so, when I talk to students now, 20 years later, I can say, if you really want to go to art school, if that's something that, you want to spend that time and whatever, research the school. Like, don't just go, oh, there's an art school, and go to it, because it might be wrong for you. Like, figure out what it is that you want to learn, and then choose a school that's going to help you learn exactly that. And if it's, and like you said, if you already, there's some people that are just like, need even painting. It's like, okay, well then just go do it. You don't need to sit in a classroom when you're already doing it. You're already experimenting. You're already, brave in that way. Just go for it. And so I think it's that, to take that time, to know who you are and to figure out what it is you need, don't need, and then make a decision. It's so hard when you're, you know, especially if you go to art school when you're 18, you come out of high school and it's just like, you don't even have time to think.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everybody's applying to schools and you got to go. And I think people aren't taking that time to think about it.
And I think the worst thing that art schools do is that they don't help people, their students, on how to actually survive as artists.
Yeah.
They basically just teach them a few things, which is good. But then how do you make money as an artist? They don't know. I've seen some amazing artists. I'm among the most popular collage artists.
Yes,
and
you
yet,
are.
I'm nowhere near the top in terms of quality. There's some amazing collage artists out there, and nobody knows anything about them because they don't know how to promote themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to be honest about that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I actually have...
People should look at the art, for example, of Brian Olson or Curses or David Del Real. These are my favorite artists. They're like a million miles ahead of me in terms of artistry. And yet, they don't promote themselves, I think they don't know how to.
Yeah.
And that's something that art school needs to provide. Then, for example, when you make an Instagram post, you need to know what time you need to make the Instagram post. What kind of tags do you need to use? Or on Tumblr or on Facebook, there are tricks that you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, I was lucky because I come from the technology world, so those things were innate to me. They were making sense immediately because I could work around the algorithms and the logic of the internet, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And most people do not have that.
You should teach a course. I'm serious.
I wrote about that on my personal blog a few times. Just for a few friends of mine that read it, but I do want to share that knowledge that I have.
Yeah,
but
it's invaluable.
Everybody's taking it with the right mind. They think, oh, Eugenia is gonna tell us how to. Well, yeah, it worked for me. Maybe it was gonna work for you.
Right. Yeah, and you have to pay attention.
Most people, in fact, want to give their art onto galleries and keep it under very strict copyright rules. So, honestly, it doesn't matter because you can actually do a lot more money if you have your own printer at home. You can get a printer with inks that don't fade for $300.
Yeah.
Sell your own prints at special editions. You can sell normal prints through Society 6 or Redbubble or any of those sites. And then have your own business, you know. But I know that a lot of artists don't want to see their art as business. But at the end, you have to live as well, right?
Yeah. Food is good. Food.
Yeah,
and
food
yeah.
is good. Food is good. as good as ink.
Yeah.
But you cannot just eat ink.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know. Okay, so you do need to have a course that people can sign up for. I had Sydney Pink on the podcast way back when I first started, and he works in at a university and in the States. I forget where is he in Baltimore? I can't remember. Anyway, they're working on trying to have a curriculum that goes across all art schools, because some art schools are now starting to have like a business class that you have to take alongside all your studio. But they're trying to make it mandatory that it's just part of art school curriculum, so that it's not just school by school. Because you're right, like people come out, I remember asking with a few months left to go in my BFA, so what do we do when we graduate? And their only suggestion was get an MFA. And I was like, what? Wait, what? And, you know, and then they're like, yeah, and then you can teach. And I'm like, but I don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, what you actually need to make yourself known out there, it's probably a course of 1 or 2 days of trying to understand the logic of the internet. And that's about it, you know? And I don't believe you need a whole MFA or anything like that, you know?
I think it's a wonder. I think it's
understand the logic behind it, and that's it.
Yeah, well, I think it's a 1 or 2 day course, and then you have to stick to it, because I know lots of people who will take courses or whatever, but they don't follow through. Like, they let that nervousness get the best of them. They let the anxiety or the shyness get the best of them. And it's like, you have to do it. Like, you can't, you know, I had a friend say, How come you just have your Jealous Curator Instagram that you occasionally put your art up on? Like, why don't you have a dedicated Danielle Crissa Instagram? And I was like, I don't know. So I started that, and I stay on top of it and I promote it. And, but it's a matter of showing up there and doing that work,
In your case, since you have a really popular Instagram page, you can definitely put more of your art there as well.
I can. And I do it every now. I don't want to be obnoxious about it. So I do it every now and then I'll link over to my Danielle Crissa art handle. And then that way it's like, I'm creeping the Jealous Curator people over there without, being too in their faces about it. And I'm kind of promoting it in other ways, but I that shyness and nervousness for me is completely gone now. Yeah. Completely gone. But it took a long time, and it took showing up every day and not, and just doing a little bit every day. And I think you take a one or two day course and then do nothing, well, of course it's not going to work for you. That course isn't magic. You know, it gives you the tools, it gives you the insights, and then you have to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I believe that as long as you are honest with your art, then it's not a problem if you try to be a little bit commercial on the side.
Yeah.
For example, I try to be as honest as I can with mine. There are some pieces that I'm not very happy about because they're simply very too pop, let's say, pieces that people like to see, but not necessarily artists like to see. Mm. But there are other pieces that I do for me, which are really show exactly who I can be as an artist and who I am as an artist. The more honest pieces, So
do you find that you still
value those much more? But those, I have to tell you, they don't sell anything. Not because they're bad. I actually like them way better. It's just that they're more difficult. They're more artsy, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
They're more abstract. They're more, so somehow people need to find a balance between the two. Mm-hmm. If they want to live off the craft, of course. If they don't, well, let them do whatever they want then.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is a very tricky little balance on a tightrope to sort of figure it all out. And
yes, in fact, when I started becoming very commercially successful commercially, I kind of lost the balance and I was losing it as an artist. And I thought, okay, I need to get back to doing the things I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it took time off to actually do the things that I wanted to do.
How long did you take?
Well, basically, I still had to do let's say the normal type of pieces, but I would do at least 3 or 4 per month that they were the things that I want to do out of, let's say, 20 pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, all of them are coming from me. They're all, if something I don't like, I never put it out.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's not mine. It is mine. It is put together by me, and it is what I believe looks good and feels good for me. But there are some pieces that are more me than, let's say, shared with other sensibilities of other people.
Yeah.
And the ones that are more me, in my opinion, are much more interesting, and they don't sell a thing.
That's exactly how mine are too. I find it's the ones that I just am so proud of, and it's just like, nobody comments exactly. About them.
In fact, I would say that out of 100 pieces sold, only 1 or 2 would be the more difficult pieces that they would be sold.
Wow, that's so funny.
So there's such a huge disparity.
Because, but you know that
if you think about it, it's the same thing with pop music. Music is pop because it's easy to digest. It's easy to remember. It's easy to understand. It goes from, you have a tune that you can always remember. But then again, if you invest time to something underground, some indie music, let's say, that requires to listen to it 5, 6, 7 times before you get it, then you understand how much deeper that kind of music is.
Mm-hmm.
But people in today's world just don't have the time. And especially for visual artists, it's even worse because we are fighting for screen time. When somebody is flicking through their Instagram, they're literally flicking through Instagram within posts of other artists or of recipes of people being on the beach in Hawaii or something.
So or dogs,
so
yeah.
In reality, we don't actually compete against artists. We compete against recipes and vegan hamburgers or whatever. That's our actual competition. And when you try to have somebody, instead of flicking through for half a second or one fourth of a second,
yeah,
stop by for just one full second, then you have to be easy to understand. Otherwise, they just want, they will continue flicking and they will just eventually unfollow you.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that crazy?
It's the times that we're living, sign of the times.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I find that it's so good as an artist to be able to give yourself the time to, yeah, to not get wrapped up in like, ooh, what's going to get the most likes? It's like, well, what
exactly,
do I
yeah.
like? What do I, you know, and take the time to make the things that you want to make. That's sort of what I'm using my gallery in Toronto for, you know. Those are the bigger pieces. Those are the ones that are kind of a bit weirder. And I really like working on those. You know,
yeah,
I was gonna.
I mostly put my popular pieces, and someone will have to come to my website actually to see the other ones.
Yeah, well, I'm putting everything up on my. I'm gonna do a big post that goes with this podcast, so I'm gonna put all sorts of stuff. So if you can email me your faves, I'll do a section in the post to say here's the complicated ones, here's the ones that are your favorite, so people can see them and take the time more than 1 second. I'm gonna say.
Sounds good.
I'm gonna say 4 seconds. Give us 4 seconds per piece. Just imagine. Wow. And I was just going to quickly ask you, like, so when you're working on those ones that, you know, feel more like you, do you still kind of get that trance-like feeling where you just sort of...
I would say that trance feeling, it comes and goes for most pieces.
Yeah.
However, there are some pieces that... I don't even feel it's me that's moving, you know, who's putting together the art.
Yeah.
For example, as I said, about you can check the 3 minutes to Nirvana on my website. I actually have even the full explanation of what it means.
Okay.
It took me hours and hours and hours working all through the night on it, and I just could not stop. My husband woke up twice that night, if I remember correctly. He said, why are you not coming to bed? And I could not stop. It was like I wasn't in my head. You know, it was somebody else in it. And I believe that is the deepest artwork I made. I don't think I will make any artwork as deep, because everything I wanted to say and everything I believe, it's on that artwork. What else? There is more to say. Hmm. So... So everything else is kind of like surrounding that artwork.
Okay. So. Well, I'm going to go and look and write it all, and I'll put it all in the post. And, you're so smart. I really, like, seriously, so many people are going to email you after this and say, please do a 1 or 2 day course. So you might want to get ready for that.
I'll send you my blog post links. I think most of the information is there.
Okay,
yeah.
I will put that in. Okay, now let's do the not-so-speedy speed round and get you on your way. Okay, I always ask this. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Oh, what kind?
Greek mountain tea. It's herbal.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of research behind it. It's very, very good for many, many reasons.
Can you drink coffee if you wanted to?
I do drink coffee sometimes, but I don't quite like it. I mean, I drink it, but
yeah.
I'm not a coffee drinker. No. I try not to be... to not get addictions, basically.
Yeah,
like addictions.
Right. You know, I was going to, I'm looping back here, but I was going to say, it's so funny. I did the same kind of diet to eliminate, because I have really bad arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And I was diagnosed at 38 and I couldn't even hold my son's hand. My hands hurt so much.
Yeah.
And they were telling me, well, you can be on medication your whole life, this, that, and the other. And I cut out sugar, dairy, and gluten. And within 5 days, I was 100% fine.
Yep.
And now
if I
eat sugar, like I had we were just in Hawaii, I had an ice cream cone, my little hands became like little claws within 15 minutes. It just hurts so much. And, you know, the ice cream's not worth it. I would rather have hands that work. But it's amazing what food can do.
Yes.
Anyway, wanted to throw that in. Okay, back to tea or coffee. Well, now this, now that I know about your food things, I can't even ask you this. My son asked me this the other day. He likes would you rather. So I was going to ask you, would you rather have ice cream with olives on it or pizza with chocolate on it? But you can't eat any of that.
I cannot eat pizza, not the normal pizza.
Would you eat
I
pizza?
I do my own with almond flour, a ketogenic version.
Could you put chocolate on it?
I can put chocolate. Actually, I put anchovies on. It's fantastic with salted anchovies. So I guess if I can put the salted anchovies on top, I'm guessing I could put chocolate on it.
Just close your eyes and go. It'd be fine. Oh, I hate anchovies. My son loves them. He dared me to eat them, and I was like, no. He's like, but you make me try stuff. And I'm like, I'm the mom. I can do whatever I want. Okay, and then last question. If you could be anywhere in the world right now, where would you want to be?
Let's just say not very far from here, from where I am right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're happy where you are?
I am happy where I am.
Yeah. I saw that you were just in Greece. Were you just in Greece a while ago?
No, I was in Greece in September and part of October. I'm now back in California.
Oh, okay. Well, how was that?
It was good.
Do you miss it? Or you,
so my family, haven't seen them for 2 years.
Yeah.
So yeah. It was great.
But you're
got stricter there with my diet. I lost 35 pounds. So
what?
So everything was good.
Oh,
I was having a good time.
I think you might be the only person to lose weight in Greece.
Actually, that's what I've been told, yes. But if you have good motivation, I can tell you it can happen. It's all about motivation, absolutely nothing else.
I know. I lost 20 pounds when I switched my diet, and all my girlfriends were trying to do it too, and then they couldn't stick to it. They're like, how do you stick to it? I'm like, chronic pain has a really funny way of motivating you.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all my questions, and we're just in time for you to go and pick up children. This was so insightful, and there was countless gems of wisdom in there. Thank you so much for doing this, and I know all the listeners are just going to be thrilled.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Of course, and I cannot wait to put the post together. So email me all the stuff, and I will put it into one big giant post that will go up on the weekend.
Sounds cool.
Okay, thank you so much. I will talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye. Seriously, how brilliant was that? So smart, insightful, and I have to say, I love what a straight shooter she is. I have put links to all of her blog posts about how to promote yourself online, etc., along with all of her work on my site, thejealouscurator.com, so pop over and have a look for more than 1 second. Please. Thank you so, so much to Eugenia for sharing her fantastic story. Thank you to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode. And of course, thank you for listening. There will be more art for your ear next weekend. See you then.